Alberta Beef Producers is looking for the next provincial representative to the Canadian Cattle Youth Council. Apply today for the chance to represent Alberta cattle producers on a national and international level. Improve your resume with learning opportunities like board governance and media training. Expand your network in the industry and learn about the many ways you can get involved now and in the future. Nominees must be between the ages of 18 and 40 and an eligible cattle producer in Alberta. Applications close May 17th, 2024. You can learn more by going to abpdaily.com. Today on The Bovine, Cook House versus Cookout, a butcher and a barbecue pitmaster share their thoughts on what makes the ultimate mouthwatering roast. Ranching 2.0, how livestock producers might soon be using an app that gives operation-specific data to make management decisions from the comfort of their armchair. And Montreal Then, Prairie Now, how someone born in the big city became a large animal veterinarian, livestock producer, and chair of the Alberta Beef Producers. But first, an introduction. Hi, I'm Deborah Murphy, and welcome to the inaugural episode of The Bovine. I'll be your host for today, and honestly, probably for most of the upcoming episodes. The Bovine is a new initiative by Alberta Beef Producers, or ABP. Before we get into the segments you heard at the start, I'd like to give a warm welcome to two guests here to help me introduce this new series. Joining me now is Melanie Woke, Chair of Alberta Beef Producers, and Lindsay Roberts, Communications and Marketing Manager for ABP. Welcome to you both.
Thanks for having us.
Melanie, from ABP Daily to the Quarterly Magazine, we saw a number of changes at ABP over the course of 2021. What are you hearing from delegates and producers on these initiatives?
I've been hearing a lot of good things, which has been very, very positive. A lot of the changes that we have with our new general manager, Brad Dubo, and the staff changes and additions that he's made at Alberta Beef have just been exceptional, especially with our communications tools. I think producers feel a lot more in tune with Alberta Beef, and I just think that a lot of what's been done has been extremely positive. Changing the zones, I realize that they've gotten quite a bit bigger, but that's just the nature of the beast. We've got less producers out there running larger numbers of cattle, and we're just a lot more spread out. So we're hoping to use a lot of these communication tools to keep everybody informed.
Lindsay, this podcast is brand new for 2022, kind of adding to those communication tools that Melanie mentioned. How does it fit into the ABP comm strategy?
I think the neat thing about the podcast is, you know, the reason why we added all of these comms tools and have kind of reformulated the comm strategy is that we really wanted to communicate to producers when and where they wanted. And the neat thing about the podcast is that it really leans into where they want to be communicated to. So what's great about the podcast is you can download it on your phone. You can listen to it while you're in the tractor or out fixing fences. It's really designed to be able to get that information that we want producers to hear where and when they want it.
Can you tell us about the inspiration for the name?
The inspiration from the name was a collective effort on the comms team, but we really wanted to, you know, lean into the fact that, you know, we're cattle people, but a lot of times in the industry, you hear news through the grapevine. So hence the bovine.
Can't have a podcast without some fun material to add. Let's record some short snippets while I have you both here. It's something you kind of often hear on radio shows, and I think it'll be fun to incorporate your voices. Melanie, do you want to go first and show us how it's done?
Sure. Hi, I'm Melanie Woke, Chair of Alberta Beef Producers, and I'm coming to you from the beautiful hamlet of Bevalin, Alberta, and this is the Bovine Podcast from Alberta Beef Producers.
Awesome. Lindsay?
I felt that's intimidating. Hey, everybody. It's Lindsay Roberts, the Marketing Communications Manager for ABP, coming to you from Calgary, Alberta, and you're listening to the Bovine.
That was great. Thank you both so much for joining us, and we'll see you back here at the end of the show.
Thank you.
It's no secret that roast can be a bit intimidating at the meat counter and even at the kitchen counter. Whether you're a new cook or seasoned in the kitchen or beside the smoker, you'll enjoy this conversation. Joining me today are two of Alberta's most passionate beef advocates. Mel Schmiller Jr. is a journeyman welder, self-taught pit master, and a force in the barbecue world. In addition to catering private dinners and offering cooking demonstrations, Mel offers insight into his world and tips and tricks for epic cooking on YouTube and Instagram. And in issue 4 of ABP Magazine, Mel shared his thoughts around roast. Mel, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm absolutely pumped to be here.
Corey Meyer is a butcher and owner of Acme Meat Market in Edmonton. Corey is an outspoken industry supporter and member of Canada's team entry in the World Butchers Challenge. Corey's work was featured in Volume 1 of ABP Magazine, and you can find him as an author on ABP Daily. He shares his passion for his trade and his unique sense of humor on Instagram and Twitter. Corey, hello.
Hey, Deborah, how are you?
I'm awesome, and I'm so excited to talk about roast. Corey, let's start with you. When a customer comes to the counter looking for a roast, what are some key questions you ask before suggesting one?
Generally, I'll start by asking them how many people they're looking to feed, you know, so I can get an idea of size, and also their cooking methods that they're going to do, like if they want to do it on the smoker or, you know, in a slow cooker, like a crock pot or something, or just straight up in the oven. It always kind of leads me in the right direction where I can take them then.
Are there ways that we can kind of remember how to or understand how to match roast up with those cooking methods?
Well, I mean, a lot of people, they stick with what they know and like. So a lot of people, they'll come in with something sort of already in mind or something that they've seen, you know, on television or in a magazine or online or something like that. It's usually generally pretty easy to be able to help people out.
Mel, do you have any favorites when it comes to roast?
I definitely do. For me, it all depends, like Corey said, what you're cooking on. If your crock pot is 19 inches long, right, you're looking for a roast that's maybe 17 inches long, depending on how many people you're feeding, right? It has to fit the size of whatever it is you're cooking on. If you have a small apartment oven, that's going to dictate how high your bones are or whatever you're trying to fit. But other than that, it's always how many people you have and how big the people are, how hungry they're going to be at the table, right? It's pretty simple. But my favorite, if that's the question, it always comes back to the prime rib. It always, in the roast world, the prime rib is the big kahuna for me. I absolutely love it.
Corey, our listeners couldn't see, but you were nodding along. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Especially here in Alberta, beef is king. The prime rib is king of roasts, right? So king of kings. Right there. Yep.
And so could anybody cook that roast?
Absolutely.
I come in, you give me a prime rib. What do I do with it?
Well, I would say generally I'll start a roast off really high, you know, to really get it cooking, you know, for about 20 minutes, half hour, depending on the size of the roast, and then turn it back to, you know, maybe about 325, 350, depending on the oven, and just let it do its thing.
And then for figuring out timing wise, is there kind of an equation depending on the pounds that you're cooking?
Sort of a general rule of thumb is that I've always been taught was about 20 minutes a pound in the oven. But again, it all will vary because everyone's oven is different, you know, different hot spots on a barbecue or, you know, there's a lot of different variables. But that's sort of my general rule of thumb.
Mel, when you got started cooking, how did you figure out how long it would take outside? These are probably way longer times you're dealing with.
Yes, the elements definitely add a whole nother equation to cooking anything outside, right? For me, the biggest part was an instant read thermometer. It became just as useful as your chef's knives or cutting knives or whatever else you're doing. An instant read thermometer, especially with a prime rib, no one wants an overcooked prime rib. That is better than a watch any day of the week. You're going by what the temperature says on that instant read thermometer, and it's going to save your roast at the end of the day, hitting that prime zone, 135, ready to pull. And that's wherever you're cooking it, whether it be the crock pot or the oven or the smoker or the barbecue, wherever it is, you're trying to hit that window, and time is kind of irrelevant. Whether it's minus 40 or plus 40, you're still looking for that internal temperature on that roast.
Can we talk leftovers for a minute? Roasts often, as we discussed, offer a pile of meat. And for smaller groups or families, if they maybe choose one that's a little too big, it could mean several meals worth of leftovers. Corey, what's your next day go-to meal using roast beef?
Sandwiches. You know, slice it up for sandwiches the next day. Can't beat it.
Mel?
Oh, 100%. I like to go all over the board. If you've got a prime rib and it's sitting in a Tupperware container in your fridge, you slice that up really thin. You've got yourself a beef dip. You make a nice au jus. That is going to be an absolute game changer. But you can buck it up and throw it over nachos. You can make tacos with it. There's a million different things. I just did a beautiful prime rib chili. And let me tell you, those huge chunks, as well as the fat, you take the tip right next to the bone, throwing that in that chili, it was just perfect. And like, who's had prime rib chili before, really? So it's actually a treat.
Totally. Corey, when you have your sandwich, you make it sound so traditional. Do you spice it up with anything?
I like to put horseradish on a sandwich because it goes so well with beef. And usually if you're having a prime rib or whatever, if you enjoy horseradish, you got a bunch of it. So just throw that on there with it, with some mustard and the kind of normal fixings, and away you go.
We'd be remiss if we didn't also hear your ideas for the best roasts for indoor and outdoor cooking. I think we've already got an idea of what you're going to say, maybe. Mel, let's start with you. Give us the name of your go-to cut for the best meal that we're going to have outside, how you would prepare it using an outdoor option, some kind of time frame, and then a description of the end product.
All right. I absolutely love taking the eye of round. Since we're on the topic of beef dip, take the eye of round and you set it up above peppers and onions in a beef broth. You smoke it on a smoker until it hits the perfect temp, 135, slice it thin, top it on top of a sandwich, and that is your perfect beef dip. Now you're digging the vegetables out of that beautiful broth, and it's heaven. It's heaven. Ooh. In a bun.
Corey, you're next. The cut, how you'd prepare it using a stovetop oven or slow cooker or some combination thereof, how long roughly it would take, and a description of what we'd be enjoying.
Well, I personally enjoy like a chuck roast or a shoulder roast. Put that in the, I usually, if I'm doing them, I'll season it up. Simple salt and pepper. Throw it in a slow cooker or crock pot with just a little bit of moisture. Set it on low, and do that when I'm heading out the door to go to work. And then by the time I get home, then it's ready to go. The house smells awesome. Take it out, drain the water out of the slow cooker, put it back in, and then just sort of shred it up. I enjoy to shred it up. And then you can use it. It's super versatile. You can use it on tacos. You can put it on nachos, like Mel was saying. Make even sandwiches, you know, like put it on a bun for sandwiches or something like that. Just can't beat it.
I'd open the floor up for debate, but it sounds like two pretty incredible options for our listeners. And it kind of showcases the versatility in roast selection and preparation. You can, the world's your oyster. Corey and Mel, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having us.
Yeah, thanks. It was a lot of fun.
That was Corey Meyer and Mel Schmiller Jr. with their thoughts on roasts. You can find Corey on Instagram and Twitter at Corey the Butcher, and Mel on Instagram and YouTube at Dark Side of the Grill. Up next, making informed decisions from the comfort of your armchair.
A project led by Livestock Gen Tech, partnered with the University of Alberta and Beef Booster, is using machine learning to generate recommendations and predictions for specific farms. It may sound complicated. The hope is to provide the information through a user-friendly mobile app. Joining me to provide some insight into this project is Kira Hames, Technology Transfer Lead for Livestock Gen Tech. Kira, welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for having me today.
This is a fairly new project. Could you give us a bit of background on it? Where did the idea for the Armchair Rancher app come from?
The idea initially came out of Dr. David Wishart's lab at the University of Alberta. He was doing some work with the AI Institute for Next Generation Food Systems at UC Davis, which is a group that aims to meet growing demands for food supply by increasing efficiencies using AI. So this got him thinking about the applications of AI in farming, and specifically the opportunities that exist in Alberta. So with this in mind, and with some help from an industry partner, which is Beef Booster, as you mentioned, he identified a need in the beef industry in Alberta, in which artificial intelligence and machine learning could be used to improve efficiencies and ultimately profitability for ranchers.
So what does that mean? What does it mean to you? And what can we look forward to seeing eventually with this project?
Yeah, so overall, the Armchair Rancher is an interactive app that will be a decision-making tool for ranchers. So allowing them to make better choices for their operation from their armchair, which is where the name came from. But this app will initially run on your computer or laptop and have an interface for ranchers to enter data from their farm, which will then be used to generate farm-specific scenarios and predictions. So there's really a couple of components to the app. One piece is the database. So right now we're working on creating a single database that incorporates all relevant industry data, weather, soil type, market trends, beef prices, feed prices, information on genomics, really anything and everything that will impact decisions made on farm. And then with this database, we can apply machine learning algorithms that will use this massive amount of data and find patterns and connections. So it will be able to understand past events and then look at some of those factors presently and use those to predict future events. Overall, we want producers to be able to build scenarios and ask that kind of what if questions that will help them make data-driven decisions for their farm.
There was an article somewhere that said, if we'd only had this Armchair Rancher app this spring, we maybe would have made some decisions differently going into summer. Will it do things like predict drought and maybe give us scenarios of what to do in case a drought is coming?
Absolutely. And that's something that we're actually looking, you know, at the database that we have collected now. What could we have done, even though we're still in the early stages? But we do believe that we could have predicted the drought as well as outcomes from the drought. Again, drought has happened in the past. There's a lot of contributing factors. So with the amount of historical information that we're able to get, you know, from weather and climate data and just from, you know, market trends and how that was affected by weather events in the past, we do think that we could have provided information to producers that would have allowed them to make better decisions and also quicker decisions. So that's one of the big things we're hoping for is kind of, you know, extreme weather events, but also on a smaller scale too. Some things that we're looking at is changes in market trends, whether it's something like we're shifting more towards Angus or more away from Angus or specific consumer preferences. You know, a big thing right now is the environmental movement and how that's affecting the beef industry. So also looking at how that kind of information can be incorporated. So in terms of machine learning, like the magic is the predictive abilities. So the more data we can put into it, the better it will be at making accurate predictions. And, you know, right now we're really excited about what we can offer. And so we're trying to get through the process as fast as possible. But we do think that things like drought, absolutely, we would have been able to predict.
So right now your focus is putting in a whole pile of data. Once that's all in there, what will it take to keep it relevant once it's up and running? Will there be staff involved in continuing to input that data, or will it be up to farmers?
So I guess there's kind of two sides of it. One side is that, so that industry data that goes into the database, the app will be self-updating. So right now we're also developing tools that will automatically and constantly update the database. But the other side of that is the farm-specific data, so what producers will directly enter into the app themselves. And this is something that, you know, the more producers that are using the app, the more data that's being contributed, the more accurate and valuable those predictions will become. So it's kind of like Ancestry.ca, you know, when it started, there wasn't a lot of people contributing yet. So you might not have been able to get a lot of information about your family history. But the more people that joined, the more information that was uploaded, the more and more you could find out, you know, about your family tree. So it's kind of a similar process with the Armchair Rancher, where, you know, the more producers that contribute, the more value it will have to everybody.
Do you have an idea of when you open the app, what will it look like? What options will you be given? And also then, I guess, what decisions can you make from your armchair?
So that's something that's still, you know, very much in development. But we're imagining, like, if you opened up the app on your computer screen, there would be one section where you could enter different data about your production. So if you just went through weaning recently, or you made some bull purchases or breeding decisions, so you'd be able to keep your information up to date. So that's one part of the interface. And the other part would be that output. So it really depends. The more information you put on your farm, the more specific it'll be to your farm. And the outputs that we're looking at, again, is building those scenarios. So it could tell you things if you wanted information on what bulls to purchase or what heifers to keep. Or maybe you're trying to decide when should you be purchasing or what are your pastures looking like or what might weather look like. We want it to be kind of as graphic and easy to understand as possible in terms of the output, but it'll really be based on what producers are specifically looking to get out of the app. So that's kind of the vision for it, I guess. And it'll be something that, you know, later on in our process, when we have something out, we'll be going through a lot of testing. We're putting together an advisory committee from the industry. So we really want a lot of feedback from producers to make sure that what they're seeing in the app is valuable to them.
You mentioned inputting data, and I think we do that in a lot of cases already in different programs. Will it synchronize with different programs and other apps?
Yeah, we're actually looking right now. So again, our goal isn't to replace any of the software that's already out there, but more to integrate it. So the value of the Armchair Rancher is really that machine learning bit and the ability for predictions. So a lot of the software that exists out there just for kind of the farm data management, we're actually looking right now at easy ways to automatically be able to map that into our system. So really, you would just have to give us permission and we would already have programs in place that would, you know, convert whatever program you're using, like HerdTracks, that would be able to convert that data right into the Armchair Rancher into a format that we can use. So hopefully making it as easy and painless as possible.
Like we mentioned, you're in pretty early days, but do you have an idea of how long until we can expect to see something in the App Store?
Sure. So yes, still very early. So probably in terms of an app you can buy in the store, we're still looking at about 3 years. That being said, there's been a lot of interest in the project. So we are looking at, you know, how we might be able to release different components in a staggered timeline. So for instance, the thing that will be done first will be the database. So even right now, we're looking at, you know, what could that database do just for some, you know, generic analysis and generic scenario building to give an example of what might be possible. So we are looking at hopefully having, you know, some things to release or build interest moving forward. But in terms of a completed app, yes, we're looking at that 3 year point.
Where can we go to kind of keep up to date, I guess, as the app progresses?
Based on the project interest, right now we're putting together an Armchair Rancher website. So hopefully that'll be out soon and we'll be able to keep everybody up to date who wants to know more about the project. And then if you'd like to be added directly to our mailing list, you can also email jennifer@beefbooster.com. She'll add you to the mailing list. And so any project updates or, you know, for instance, when the website will go live, that information will be emailed out to our mailing list.
Very good. Kira, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
That was Kira Hames, Technology Transfer Lead for Livestock Gentech. Up next, how the prairies and cows pulled a Ukrainian family and their future veterinarian west, and the growing concerns of the veterinary shortage.
Well, if you are keeping close tabs on the drought in Alberta or you're involved in the beef industry at all, it's likely you've heard the name of our next guest. In fact, you heard it earlier in the show. Joining me now is Dr. Melanie Woke. Melanie is a livestock producer, veterinarian, and current chair of the Alberta Beef Producers. Melanie, welcome back to the mic.
Hi, thanks for having me today.
I want to talk to you about some of the work you're doing as chair. But first, you have kind of a unique story. You're not originally from a cattle operation. Tell us about where you grew up.
No, I was actually born in Montreal. My parents were first generation from Ukrainian immigrants, and that's where they were born. We were born there, and then my dad always had a passion to live out west. When I was 8 years old, he moved the whole family out, and I finished growing up in Calgary. Never stood beside a cow until veterinary school. I remember the first week at school, we were in the dairy barn, learning how to lead cows on halters. I don't know why we did that, but it was something, I think it was kind of a joke for first year students. And I remember thinking, man, you know, these girls are big, and I'd really kind of only driven by one on the highway. And then I continued on with my summers. I went into mixed animal practices so I could get some experience with cattle. And I really did just fall in love with beef cattle and beef cattle practice. And to tell you the truth, it was really all about the producers and how at home they made me feel and how they supported me. when I started my practice, and they were just so much different than, you know, dog and cat owners or horse owners. Even the cattle people were just kind of a special breed in their own. And so that's what I ended up doing for over 20 years and thoroughly enjoyed it.
You mentioned how big the cow felt that first time you stood beside her. Did it take you a long time to get over that feeling?
You know, I still do our calvings at home when they need me. And every time I stand beside a cow to start a C-section, I get a little bit of a pit in my stomach, a little bit of a scared feeling. You know, you never know how it's going to go. They're big, strong animals. And You know, often in practice, we used to say your next wreck is just around the corner, because if something goes wrong, it typically goes really wrong. So it was always a challenge. Every day was a challenge. And I think that's what I enjoyed so much. And that's one of my favorite things to do is to calve out cows. And luckily, I still get to do that at home some.
So you kind of stumbled into the large animal side of things, but something must have drawn you to becoming a veterinarian to begin with. When did you realize you wanted to be a vet?
From the time I think I could say the word, I was just always, you know, people ask you what you wanted to do when you grew up, and I always said a veterinarian. I don't think I ever thought I would end up, you know, being a cattle or a large animal veterinarian. It was just I never thought about it, but it was something that I pursued, and I always enjoyed the sciences, and I luckily have a good mind for memorization, because that's, you know, seems to be a lot of what veterinary school is about, was just ingesting a whole bunch of information in a short period of time. And luckily I was able to do that and get through it and get my license. And I feel very, very lucky that A, I got into veterinary school, and B, that I was able to practice as long as I did.
You've kind of stepped away from it now. Do you miss it?
No, over 20 years of being on call, you know, over 24/7 when I had my own practice and I was by myself, and the cold weather, you know, I was immobile. I had a mobile practice, so all my work was done outside or in cold barns, and it just wore on me after a while. I've got a few injuries that, you know, in my 50s really started to creep up on me. So I've moved now into the pharmaceutical industry as a technical services veterinarian. I really, really enjoy that. I'm able to work with veterinarians across Canada, and I get to use a lot of my experience and my knowledge from those 20 years to help other veterinarians work through their cases and use our products to the best of their ability.
So you've mentioned 20 plus years in the industry. What have you seen for changes in the veterinary environment in that time?
Well, as far as practice, you know, being on the road, doing that kind of practice, facilities, definitely people improve their facilities. The other big thing is that herds just got larger. We lost a lot of smaller producers, especially once we were dealt BSE. And that, I was saying, I think when I retired, I could count at least 50 producers that I had done work for that hadn't, either nobody had replaced, you know, they had retired. So definitely cattle herds got larger, but cattle numbers also shrunk a lot in our area, and was one of the reasons for me closing my practice. The other thing is I think the veterinary shortage has become a lot more apparent. When I first started in practice, you know, you pretty much had to run out to that call, or some other veterinarian would get there before you. And by the end of it, I was getting calls from as far away, two and a half hours away, to come out and do, you know, calvings, because they couldn't find anybody else. And it just, you know, just doesn't work when you're driving that much and you're trying to service your own clients in your area to go that far. And as a cattle producer, you feel for those people, you know, not only is that money that they're losing, but you get attached to these animals. Most producers just want to help them and will do anything they can to do so. And so that was tough, and it's still tough, because I still get calls now to go out and do things, and the way my license is set up, I can't. You know, you sure want to, because you can just hear the desperation of these people's voices when they can't get a hold of a veterinarian.
How bad is the veterinary shortage? How widespread is it?
It's widespread. It's throughout North America. So not only in Canada, but also the United States, actually worldwide. We talk a lot about bringing in foreign veterinarians, but a lot of these countries are telling us that their shortages are just as bad where they are. And not only mixed in large animal practice, small animal, practice is also experiencing a shortage. If you ever look through the Alberta Veterinary Medical magazine at the back, there is a list of jobs, and it's just pages and pages and pages long. That's one thing about going into veterinary medicine is you can work wherever and do whatever right now because there's just so many job openings. I think it's absolutely reached its critical point right now. And, you know, it was starting to get talked about when I graduated in 93, and it's just gotten progressively worse.
What can we do? What can communities do? What can people outside of the veterinary industry do to help with this problem?
That's a really good question. And we have been, Alberta Beef Producers has been working alongside the Alberta Veterinary Medical Association. We have met with them privately. We've met with them, with government officials, and I have been sitting as a representative for Alberta Beef Producers on a committee with other stakeholders to try and deal with this issue. It's just such a big issue. And the question is, for me, is because of the change in dynamics in veterinary medicine, you know, when I was there were still more men in my class than there was women. Now the number of women outranks men. Oh, most class sizes are about 85 to 90% women. So for me, and I hope nobody takes this the wrong way, but as a woman, I can say, I think the biggest thing that we have to do is try and figure out how to keep young women in rural practice. At the end of the day, that's the question we have to answer. I don't have a good answer for that question. I've joked that they need to start setting up some type of dating thing with cowboys that live in the middle of nowhere, because that's where I ended up and that's how I ended up there. You know, I laugh about it, but it's tough for a young woman that's, you know, potentially having children and raising them and you know, keeping things going at home and running a practice. And a lot of these places, it would be a one person practice, and you need a lot of support to be able to do that. And that's the question I think we have to answer. The other thing that's been brought up is just having animal health technologists open up their scope of practice. So now the Veterinary Association is allowing them to preg test, which I think will help veterinarians a lot, frees up a lot of their time to work on other cases and to do other things that are expected of them rather than them just being out there preg testing.
There are a lot of parallels with human medicine right now, aren't there?
There are, yeah. I mean, in our area, getting in to see a doctor is just, you know, it's a month and a half to 2 month waiting period just to get in to see your GP. And so, and again, the question there is how do we keep people in rural settings? And that's just, I think it's a problem that we could discuss, you know, till tomorrow. And right now, I don't have any good solutions. I'm hoping somebody else will come up with something.
What are you looking forward to for this, Nick, for this year, for 2022 with the Alberta Beef Producers and maybe on the vet shortage? What are some first steps?
Well, I'm really hoping we get some rain and lots of snow. I'm hearing that La Nina is back and she's supposed to bring a lot of snow to us. As I work as a technical services veterinarian now, I don't travel and work out of my basement. So I'm hoping for about 20 feet of snow in our areas so we get lots of good runoff and we can get our pastures restored next year. That's really been the main thing I think on everybody's mind is what this spring is going to bring. I think those of us that are able to have some holdover and maintain some of our numbers, I'm hoping that we'll see, you know, a real spike in prices next year. Unfortunately, because of the drop in numbers, that's, you know, what analysts are predicting, that these calf prices should go up because there will be a drop in the numbers. You know, boy, that sure would help a lot of people recover coming out of this year. You know, there's other things that Alberta Beef is always working on. The veterinary shortage will continue to work with the Veterinary Association and the Alberta government to try and figure out solutions for that. But I think that's, you know, a long-term type of project that hopefully will get sorted out. You know, there's always things like, you know, we're working on the grazing lease changes, you know, the discrepancies in pricing at the stores over what we're getting on the farm is something that we're starting to address. That's something that producers have really, really been pushing me about personally in the last couple months.
And I guess you'll be seeing some of those producers in the coming months as well.
Yes, at this recording, I'm hopefully going to be at Farm Fair at the booth there. We're planning on attending the Supreme Show on Saturday, which I'm really excited about at Farm Fair. It's good to have Farm Fair back, and we'll be able to see a lot of people there. And then, of course, our meetings, our producer meetings have been moved from typically when we used to hold them in November. They will now be held over January and February. They're going to have a new platform. There will be, hopefully we'll get to do them in person. We'll be able to see each other again, and we're going to be able to talk about a lot of these topics that need to be discussed. Sometimes very difficult to do over a Zoom-type platform or an online-type platform, and hopefully we'll get a lot of producers out to these meetings to discuss some of these issues that we're facing and just really to get visiting with each other again.
Where can people go to find out more information on those meetings that are coming up?
Well, we have our amazing new platforms, which I think, boy, if you don't know what's going on in Alberta beef, then you must be hiding in a closet somewhere, because we have some fantastic tools. ABP Daily is the online resource. There's also the ABP app, so you can just open up your phone every morning to see what's going on. Get on our mailing list. We have a great weekly wrap-up of what's going on around the beef industry. So really, there's no excuse to not know what's happening at Alberta Beef.
Dr. Wolk, thank you so much for joining us.
Great. Thanks very much.
All right. Here we are wrapping up our first podcast. Setting aside any biases, what did you both think of season one, episode one?
I thought it was fantastic. I really enjoyed the armchair segment. I think that's a tool that we can all use to try and improve our efficiencies on the farm. I also really liked the roasting ideas. I'm not a great roaster, and that's something I'll definitely, some of those tips I'm definitely going to use.
Lindsay?
Yeah, I learned so much this episode of the podcast. You know, it's great to see some of the innovations coming from right here in our backyard. And Melanie, it's always great listening to you and your perspective on what's going on in industry. I truly hope that the roast segment really inspires people this winter. And I know I sure will take some of those tips and tricks into my own kitchen.
Melanie, I don't want to put you on the spot, but will you be tuning into the bovine as you check cows on the family ranch or drive to and from the upcoming ABP meetings?
Absolutely. I am a huge, huge podcast listener. My kids and husband really bug me about it. So this is definitely one I'm going to be downloading for sure. And that's one thing I really like about these podcasts is once you've got it downloaded, you don't need internet. You can listen to it anywhere.
Lindsay Roberts, Dr. Melanie Wolk, thank you both so much for joining us and for getting this off to an excellent start.
Thank you.
That's all for this episode of The Bovine. Stay tuned to ABP Daily and your favorite podcast apps for our next episode. And hey, have an idea for a future show? A question you'd like us to answer? Or want to share where you're listening? Get in touch on social by tagging Alberta Beef Producers and using hashtag ABP's The Bovine. Or email podcasting@albertabeef.org. Until next time.